Wow. We have a speaker this morning. I copied and we handed out some information about Rabbi Ted Falcon. In the pilgrimage that I've taken across the earth, there have been many meetings with remarkable men, and none more so than he in my life. I think anything that I would say would be trivial in light of the teaching that he might offer you. So it is beyond a pleasure and an honor to be able to welcome Rabbi Ted Falcon to this platform for his first time here. So let's say good morning to Rabbi Ted, please.
Boy, oh boy, what great music. John McClane is one of my favorite people. Ruth and I used to live in Los Angeles. We moved to Seattle a little over 22 years ago. It was in Seattle that we met John McClane, and then he left and came to LA. And it's been great to visit here, and we are truly grateful. It's a very interesting thing to be invited to speak somewhere that I've never spoken before and like to have one time to speak. In the past, I've been aware that there are speakers who have files of their favorite talks. You know, and when they go somewhere, they're just excited to go somewhere that they haven't spoken before because they could say the thing they got the best response from. And nobody will know that they've just said it 50 times. And one of my gifts is that I can't remember what I say. So it's somewhat of a challenge, and I love it. So I wondered, okay, what would I have to say? And when I kind of look into what the energies of a week holds, I look into the Torah. In Jewish tradition, the five books of Moses, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, are divided into sections. Each section is called a parashah, a portion. And a portion is assigned to every week during the year, so that every year we read through the Torah cycle. And if we haven't, or at least for me, if I don't find in the portion something that I've never seen before, then I know I'm stuck. Because a spiritual literature reflects the spiritual nature of those through whom that literature took shape. And we are beings of infinite levels. Infinite levels. Every time we think we have made a final transcendence, we have elevated beyond the level where we had been, and we think now we're there, we're stuck again. And one never knows when we are going to awaken. I make a certain assumption. The assumption I make is that I'm asleep most of the time. You know, you don't even know you're asleep till you wake up. Is that not so? We wake up in the morning, we go, oh, I must have been asleep. And I feel that way just all the time. What am I asleep to now? And I won't know until I wake up, and then I go, oh. And that awakening is an infinite joy and an infinite pleasure. Because just as the statements that we shared earlier affirm, that to which we awaken always reflects deeper levels of our own being. Always. And it is so remarkable to enter into that remarkable exploration of the one we are. So, whenever I'm speaking, I look at, okay, what's happening in the Torah? What's happening in the readings of the week at this time? And I'll tell you, the Torah portion that just completed yesterday is my favorite Torah portion. I could tell there's not a lot of people here from my old congregation because I say that every Torah portion is my favorite portion. But the Torah portion for the week that has just been, it's called Yitro. Yitro is Hebrew for Jethro. It's the Torah portion that has the major revelation at Sinai. Oh, man. Revelations. Revelations are so fascinating. You know, I'm among those who believes that revelation is going on all the time. I think the difference between revelation and ordinary communication is actually relatively simple. A regular communication happens at a particular time and in a particular place. It can be repeated, it can be shared, it can be memorized, it could be learned, whatever. But it takes place in a then. Revelation, as opposed to ordinary communication, is a communication that's happening all the time. The only then in revelation is called now. And whenever that now awakens, it's always now. And sometimes it awakens in the midst of incredible noise. The scene at Mount Sinai. God, it was a great scene. You remember? I mean, on some level, all of us were standing there. Did the story actually happen? Is this historical fact? I don't know. But it's consciousness fact. We were standing around a mountain, and the mountain was smoking, and it was thundering, and there's cloud, and there's lightning, and there's earthquake. The mountain is shaking, and we're feeling awe. Oh. And of course, as usual, we were terrified. So we found a guy, Moses. We said to Moses, "You go up and tell us." The interesting thing about that is whenever we do that, we're sure not to own it. Because as long as we're listening to somebody else, we're hearing what's their truth. But out of that thunder and out of that lightning and out of that quaking and out of the sound of the shofar, you know what a shofar is. This is the difference between a Los Angeles audience and a Seattle audience. Shofar is the ram's horn. But you knew that, I know. It's the only sound other than the lightning and the thunder that they said was happening then. It's like the sound of the musicians. It's like a sound that just reverberates through every cell of your being, and you wonder, okay, what do we hear? And somehow out of that sound, this man Moses came down and told us what he heard. Because the truth of the matter is, revelation is a difficult issue for me because I don't believe God talks. I don't believe in a God who has a personality. We have personalities. And we have a tendency to project our personality out onto the universe and think that God has this personality and does what a personality does, namely, give us rules, judge us continually, for certainly that's what we do, reward us when we do right and punish us when we do wrong. That's not God. That's a projection of our own personality. That God of the universe is always expressing love. You know that. That God of the universe is always expressing wisdom, but waiting to be heard on the channel that's called revelation. It's almost like finding the way to tune to that channel. Moses heard it in the midst of great noise, great sound, awe. Some 4 centuries later, a prophet named Elijah heard it in silence. Remember? Elijah's fleeing for his life. He hides in a cave. He comes out of the cave, and there's, I wrote this down, this order. I always forget. First came great wind so strong it split rocks. And it says, but God was not in the wind. And then came the earthquake, and everything's shaking, but God is not in the earthquake. And then came the fire, but it says God is not in the fire. And then came kol demama daka, what gets called a still small voice, the sound of silence. And in that, something awakened. 1969, I was living in Los Angeles, and like a lot of people who come to Los Angeles from Ohio, it took about a year and a half for my life to fall apart. The interesting thing about falling apart is that that was really an expansion. It was really cracking open. It was such a gift. Yes, it's true. I didn't think of it that way at the time. So I left town. I got to take a couple weeks off from my job, and I went up to a place many of you know called Esalen. And I was sitting. I spent a couple weeks with the teachers there. I was sitting with a teacher named John Lilly. I don't know if any of you remember him. John Lilly was crazy. So I fit right in. He was the man who was talking to dolphins, doing a lot of LSD research. I'm not sure where those were at the same time. What he did with us, we were lying on the floor of what was then Fritz Perl's cabin. Fritz was older already, but he was still there. And Lily was playing on large audio speakers in those days, reel-to-reel tape. Some of you might remember what that was. And we were lying down, he said, listen to what's happening. And it sounded to me like a jet engine taking off, you know, just a constant noise. And after a while, as I was listening, I heard behind the sound, I heard an orchestra. It was amazing. The orchestra was playing classical music, and at the time particularly, I was not an aficionado of classical music. I didn't know what piece it was, but it was recognizable. And then, kind of in front of the orchestra, was an acoustical guitar solo, and I remember wondering, how can it be so clear that I can hear not only the orchestra, but the solo? And I was waiting till this moment was complete to ask that question. How did they do that? So after a few minutes, the sound went off, everybody around the circle sat up, and John asked us to share what we had heard. And as people started sharing, I noticed that they were unable to hear the orchestra. And then a few more people went on, and it occurred to me there was no orchestra. I was the only one who heard an orchestra, and I was the only one who heard the guitar solo. And then I wondered, well, it turned out to be pink noise. You know what white noise is. White noise has no colorations. Pink noise has all the colorations. And it does, in fact, sound like a jet engine taking off. But it's like all silence. It's like all sound. Everything is there, depending on how we listen. And I started wondering, okay, what else am I hearing, and what else am I seeing, and what else am I experiencing that no one else is experiencing, but I think they are? And I thought about Revelation. What is Moses hearing in that sound? What is Elijah hearing in that silence? And I realized that what is heard depends on what we are needing to hear. What is heard depends on what our own level of consciousness is. And what is heard is precious and important. What is heard is really crucial. So I look at what Moses said he heard. Moses said he heard what, you know, he comes down the first time and he gives what get called the Ten Commandments. In Torah, actually, they're never called commandments and they're never called Ten Commandments. They're called 10 words or 10 things. Some of them are much more statements than they are commandments. And even the numbering of 10 is, they don't come numbered. So that in fact, the way Jews number them, the way Protestants number them, and the way Catholics number them are all slightly different. In Jewish tradition, the first principle that's heard is, I am the Eternal One, your God. I am the Eternal One, your God, who brings you out of Egypt. Egypt is a symbol for enslavement, tight places, stuck places. It's not just a geographical location. It's a location in consciousness that each and every one of us knows personally. I am the Eternal One, your God, who takes you out of the places of stuckness, out of the houses of bondage. Yeah. That energy is the way out of a consciousness of enslavement. And then it says, you can have no other gods before me. It's interesting because the word used that we don't pronounce, that stands for the Eternal One, gets translated Lord. It's a terrible translation. Lord is way too small. The Hebrew letters Yud Heh Vav Heh. It's a form of the Hebrew verb to be, and it essentially means what is. The first thing is saying God is what is. God is being. Anything that is in being. It's not to be argued. How are you going to argue that one? Is it? if it is, then it says you can't have any other God. Well, of course you can't have any other God. Being is the whole thing. Anything else is just a piece of that thing, and as long as you focus on a piece of that thing, or whether it's an image, or whether it's money, or fame, or relationship, or whatever else we focus on, we split the universe apart. And when we split the universe apart, the consequences are the universe that we're now living in, fraught with war and hate and suspicion, fraught with separation, fragmentation. And the way out is the awakening to oneness. The way out is always the awakening to connection. And then comes the third principle. And the third principle is my very favorite. You know what the third principle is? Well, go find out and then I'll tell you about it. The third principle is usually translated, it comes as a commandment. They say, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Remember that one? I don't know how it was for you, but when I was growing up, I was told that meant don't swear. Imagine this. The most important thing is there's only one. The next important thing is anytime you make something less than one be the focus of your attention, everything's going to fall apart. And the third one's going to be, don't swear. I mean, that's astonishing. And all of us go, yeah, don't swear. If I say, God damn it, the whole world's going to fall apart. That's even more important than don't kill people. That's more important than don't steal. Oh, yeah, don't swear. So what I do when I meet such astonishing kinds of statements is I get to look at the Hebrew. The Hebrew is interesting. I was once at an interfaith event. Actually, this was in Los Angeles. I lived in Seattle, but I was brought down here to be part of this thing. And at a lunch, a woman minister was holding her Bible and she held it up and she said, this is the word of God. And after the program, I went up to her and I said, I don't know exactly what you mean when you say this is the word of God. She said, this is the word of God. So I look at the Bible and I open it up and it says King James Version. And I said, okay. This text was originally written in Hebrew. Then it got translated in a book called the Septuagint into Greek. Then it got translated into a book called the Vulgate in Latin. Then it got translated into English. And the King James, during the time of Shakespeare, was an English translation. Since then, it's been translated more times than any other book. There are dozens and dozens of translations of this book, and they're still being written. So I said, I don't understand what you mean when you say this is the word of God. And she looked at me with fire in her eyes. She took that book, held it up, and said, this is the word of God. We are such interesting creatures. So, Lo tisa et shem Adonai Elohecha lashav says, it doesn't have to be a commandment. It says you can't lift up, namely you can't use the name of the eternal one, your God. Lashav, which is translated in vain, literally means for nothing. You can't use the name of the eternal one, your God, and have nothing happen. Because there's so much power in that name that it's going to impact our reality. Now the question is, what's the name? Well, there's only one time in the Bible that God has ever asked his name. And when I say his, it doesn't mean God is a guy. It just means that in Hebrew, there is no neuter. Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic, all they have is masculine, feminine. Everything in the universe, all nouns are either masculine or feminine. A chair, a table, it's got to be masculine or feminine. In some ways, that's a gift because it reminds us that everything is alive. Everything's alive. In some ways, it's not a gift because then we got to say God is either he or she. We don't have an it. So it just might as well be her name, however you want to hear it. But what's the name? A little earlier in the book of Exodus, Moses actually asked God, what's your name? It's a great passage. This is the burning bush, which is also a terrible translation. I mean, it can't be just a little burning bush. It's got to be a light that is just streaming through a breach in the very fabric of space and time. A light that is so intense that it could consume everything, and it doesn't because it doesn't. Moses asks, what's your name? And the answer that comes totally quickly, God says, which is to say, Moses hears, Ehiye Asher Ehiye, I am as I am. And I don't believe that's limited by time. I am, I was, I am, I am, I am, I will be, I am. And that's justified by biblical Hebrew grammar. So if God's name is I am, the truth of the matter is we use God's name more than we use any other name. There's no name any of us uses more than I am. Whether we're speaking it or whether we're thinking it, we are continually saying, I am this, I am that. I am not this, I am not that. And the principle is astonishing because the principle says, anytime you use that name, it's going to have an impact. Anytime you use that name, it's going to have an effect. Because it's the most powerful name one can use. And our individual I am is a reflection of a universal, absolutely inclusive I. Think about it. How are you using your I? How are you using the name of God? How are you using the essential power that awakens through you always? Whether you hear it in the middle of loud sounds, or whether you hear it in silence. What are you doing with your I am? Because whatever you're doing, whatever we're doing, has an impact. We cannot use the name of God and have nothing happen. So I'm going to invite you to utilize it consciously right now. I'm not clever enough to have sent along these statements so that they could be on this screen. So you're going to have to imagine. I'm going to say a sentence a couple times, and I'm going to invite those of you who would like to use the name of God in the service of that statement to say it with me. Okay? And this is the first one. I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. Let that go inside for just a minute. You could almost listen to the voice of the ego going, "Yes, but." And it's just like saying to that voice, "I understand, but there's a deeper voice. There's a deeper truth. And the deeper truth is I am exactly where I'm supposed to be." I am doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I am doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Once more, I am doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And let that go. And understand that that doesn't lock us into where we are and what we're doing. The acceptance of the moment always enables growth, evolution, and expansion to occur. It's the resistance to a moment that keeps us locked in. Always. We can only hook up to each other lovingly. Is that not so? And this terrible truth is we can only let go of each other lovingly. Because when we try to let go of each other and we're carrying anger, that anger binds us forever. I am exactly where I want to be. I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And this is the big one. I am exactly who I am supposed to be. I am exactly who I'm supposed to be. I am exactly who I am supposed to be. Hold that. Okay, I'll tell you one more thing and then I'm done. Spirituality. We all talk about spirituality. But if spirituality is real, then it's with us all the time. Spirituality is the one kind of learning that's different from all other kinds of learning. Everything else I want to learn about, I go to a book, I go to an expert. But spirituality is different because spirituality is something we already come with. We're already equipped. If somebody says, "I can make you spiritual," run the other way. Because what they're really saying is, "I can make you like me." And that's a whole other trip. At best, we create contexts. Like my blessed friend John McLean does, we create contexts in which we can help each other remember who we are. But if spirituality is universal, and if spirituality is something we come with, then it's got to be so close to us. It's got to be something we know all the time. And there is something we know all the time. There is something each of us carries that we have carried that has stayed the same forever. The same for us when we were little, when we're older. The same for every human being that's ever lived. The same for every human being who shall ever live. And there's only one of it. You know what it is? Silence. There's only one silence. There's no Jewish silence, even though that might be an oxymoron. There's no Jewish silence, there's no Christian silence, there's no Muslim silence, there's no Buddhist silence, there's no Hindu silence, there's silence. And that silence is universal. And I don't care whether that silence awakens in the midst of great sound or that silence awakens in the absence of sound. That silence is the witness, that silence is the consciousness behind the voice in our heads. That consciousness is the silence from which the channel of revelation always streams forth, waiting, yearning to be heard. And what I would offer you is the beginning of hearing is to appreciate I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. I am doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing at this moment. I am with exactly the people I'm supposed to be with. And I am exactly the person I am supposed to be right now. From the silence we all meet, let blessing pour forth. From the silence we all meet, let that great I am support the healing, the wholeness, the peace, the restoration of the oneness of all being pour forth. Thanks, folks.